Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
This is the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelain.
Man, what a weekend, people. Just weird results everywhere. EPL, it may not be the best talent, but man, it's the best entertainment value for sure. I mean, I'm climbing out from under this upset apple cart. There's just crazy results everywhere.
Like the old joke, they say it's the most fun you can have with your pants on.
Pretty much.
That's the EPL this weekend, boys and girls.
The first time in a long time where everybody except my team basically had poor results, which was fantastic for me.
So, all right, let's get the non-studio crowd fired up, Corey, and then we'll get into the talk.
Obviously, there's some Leicester fans here this week.
Yes, I do see some blue and some people wearing some fox skins on their heads.
Oh, what do they say?
What does the fox say? He says, thank you, Mr. Referee or Mr. Match Official.
Yes.
Isn't that how it goes in real life? I don't know.
That sounds good. We're already off the rails here.
That sounds great. Anyway, so let's just talk a little bit.
Sure.
Man, we had some crazy stuff here. You had people getting beat who shouldn't get beat, I guess. You got West Ham beating Liverpool. You got West Brom beating Tottenham. Leicester beat Manchester United. And then you have Crystal Palace beating Everton. So,
yeah, man, what's going on with Martinez?
So stuff all over the place. You know, I didn't see anybody on Twitter with, you know, their crazy accumulators that they tweet out with pictures. Oh, yeah. So I'm pretty sure nobody had those string of upsets.
Yeah, I imagine today's if you had an accumulator for this weekend and it hit, you could probably buy Chelsea. Let's just put it that way.
Yes, and we'll get into that buying Chelsea.
Whoa, okay.
Here in a little bit, as we get into that match. But let's start just kind of in chronological order, and it's somebody that we talked about last week, and that is Newcastle and their manager Alan Pardue, who I like to call Alan Pardouche. And yes. His side drew 2-2 at home against Hull, with, you know, two late goals, or late-ish. They scored in the 73rd minute, and then they scored in the 87th minute to rescue a point.
Yeah, and by a substitute, so it was definitely by the skin of their teeth.
That's true. And I guess it was the same person, duh. It was Cisse. Yeah.
Yes.
Came off the bench to bag both goals.
Boy, and he was trying. Newcastle fans like to bash on him because he likes to stray off sides. And man, you could see from the clip of the tying goal. Man, he was wanting to stray offside, but somehow he held his line.
Yes, and good for him. And the reason we bring this up first, if you watched the game on NBC, they talked about this and they highlighted this quite a bit. But fans, have started up sackpardue.com, and they had a bunch of, you know, place cards. They gave out a bunch of place cards, and you could see the Newcastle faithful, or the Newcastle unfaithful in this case, with their Sack Pardue signs. And I just must say that, you know, they are really committed to this cause, Corey, because they, instead of purchasing sackpardue.co.uk, they actually purchased the sackpardue.com.
Yeah, they no doubt went to GoDaddy and got that registered.
So Give me some of your thoughts here on what you saw at the end of this match.
Yeah, which I'm like you that and it's not like we're in a minority or anything because Alan Pardew is definitely an abrasive type of personality, to put it you know, in a sense of trying to be fair here. But yeah, it was kind of, I had to laugh when you know, he comes out before the game and he sticks his head out of the dugout and kind of defiantly claps you know, towards the fans who were booing him. And then, you know, obviously they fall down 2-0, and you can tell he's pretty I don't know if worried's the right word, but you could tell he was fairly annoyed at how things were going. And then, you know, obviously he was bringing on Cisse anyway, and then Hull goes up 2-0, and then of course Cisse comes on and then, you know, basically saves Pardew's bacon. But I had to laugh when they scored the equalizer. Of course the camera cuts to Pardew and he's given like this really defiant, like, yeah, stick it up in you, like, fist. It wasn't necessarily like directed to the crowd, but you can tell it was kind of on his mind, and that was just kind of like a, yeah, stick it up, everybody, take that, you lot. And then I wake up this morning and Newcastle's still at the bottom of the table, which made me chuckle. So yeah, stick it up in you from the bottom, I guess.
They're laughing at you, Alan.
Yeah, they're all gonna laugh at you, Alan. But yes, it was pretty funny because, of course, Mike Astley comes out before the game and claims that he, you know, this game isn't going to decide Pardew's job. But the way Pardew kind of was giving, you know, shaking his fist with, you know, determination, I kind of have to feel that Astley might have been just giving a PR line or the famed vote of confidence right before the guillotine drops.
And it could very well drop soon. Here are the two upcoming Newcastle fixtures. Newcastle will play Crystal Palace in the League Cup midweek. And then their next league game is against Stoke. So you would think those are two very winnable games with the roster they have. So my suggestion to him is win if you want to keep your job.
Yeah, the League Cup, he might get a pass because depending on what kind of lineup they put out. But with his job on the line, I would think he would put out a fairly strong lineup in the League Cup. Because, yeah, it's never a good – as much as I always tell people on Twitter about, you know, contract lengths and having to pay people off and buyout clauses and this and that, it's never a good sign when – a vast majority of your club's fan base does not like the manager, and it's clear that Pardew's finally wore out his welcome in Newcastle and is pretty unpopular with the fans.
That is certainly the case. And speaking of managers who are unpopular with the fans, that segues us into West Ham.
Oh, yeah.
West Ham played Liverpool and
West Ham Alona?
Yes, and they defeated them 3-1. First half, or you know, opening match goals by Winston Reid, and then Sacco. Raheem Sterling got a goal about midway through the first half to make it 2-1,
and caused Balotelli to levitate. I don't know if you saw that meme.
No, I didn't see that. Mm-mm.
Yeah, Balotelli has to jump out the way. And he jumps out the way enough to where he looks like he's sitting down. So, of course, everybody was, like, photoshopping that, you know, into, you know, funny situations.
Oh, it's David Blaine.
Yeah, it's levitating Balotelli.
The David Blaine of the footballing world. And then, of course, late in the half, one of my favorite players, Morgan, the cask of Amalfitano, scored the late goal in the 88th minute to, you know, kill the game off for West Ham.
Yeah, and I know you said you didn't see the match, but did you happen to see a clip of Amalfitano's goal?
No.
Yeah, it was kind of odd the way he scored it. He did like a toe poke, but it wasn't like an actual toe poke. It was almost like he flicked it with his toe, and he does it kind of in a nonchalant manner. It just looked funny.
Well, when you've been, you know, encased in a bunch of bricks and left for dead.
Yeah, it's just...
You could do cool stuff like that.
And he did, because, like I said, it's just basically kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess they'll score right now, and just kind of like, meh, all right, and then I'll go celebrate.
Mm-hmm. But here's the big thing about this Liverpool defeat, and if you are a Liverpool supporter, this has got to be cause for concern. Now, all in last year, in their, you know, their title contending run, which they did have until the death of the season, all of last year, Liverpool only suffered 6 defeats. But already, Jan, in this 14-15 season, this West Ham victory gives Liverpool their 3rd loss already. So that is not good for Liverpool and their supposed title hopes. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and 3rd loss, and they haven't really played a lot of the perceived big sides yet, other than Man City, too. But yeah, the other thing that would be concerning for me if I was a Liverpool fan is I saw a lot of our online buddies that follow and support Liverpool talking about how they felt like the team didn't give didn't give a good effort, and, you know, I don't want to use a stereotypical didn't show passion, but that they were displeased with the effort on Saturday. So this early in the season, when, you know, this year they actually have continental football they have to worry about that they didn't last year, that would concern me greatly if I was a Liverpool fan. But the other thing I was going to say was that Liverpool's kind of fall from grace, so to speak, doesn't surprise me in a sense that for all the hype that surrounds a guy like Mario Balotelli, the next time he scores 15 league goals in a season, it'll be his first. And he's not exactly the kind of guy that a team can rally around in the sense that he's a fairly selfish, individualistic type of player where, you know, for all his faults, Suarez was a guy who was definitely going to run around and get himself into a match other than scoring goals, where when Balotelli's not getting the ball, he tends to kind of sulk and take it out on people like he did on the West Ham's keeper. That and when they replaced a fairly average central defender with another fairly average defender at 20 million, or overpriced at 20 million, in my opinion, that it's not really that surprising that when you lose a 30-goal scorer, that all of a sudden you're not going to score those 100 goals that won you a lot of matches last year, and all of a sudden that defense that leaked 50 goals last year becomes more of an issue because you don't have, you know, the 30-goal scorer to offset, you know, those defensive frailties. So, I mean, I'm not calling for, you know, Liverpool to fall to mid-table or anything, but I wouldn't consider them a title challenger even this early in the season.
No, and yeah, it is probably too early, as you said, to rule them out, but you could easily make the comment and I can't say the word because I'm out of my mind right now, but you could easily see that that they may not be in the title chase because, you know, when you have a player of Suarez's status who's just banging in goals on a regular basis, that does paper up a lot of cracks that may be in the team, and I think that we're seeing that so far this season. And so it will remain to be seen if Liverpool can tighten the ship and go on a run, because they're going to need to.
Yeah, because the other problem with losing Suarez is the other talisman and, you know, the bigger talisman than even Suarez is obviously Gerard, who oftentimes, wins or grabs a result for Liverpool just through a sheer will. But some people tend to forget that, you know, Gerard's 35 now, and, you know, so obviously he's getting up there, probably losing a step, which you know, is kind of hidden a little, or, you know, that fact is kind of hidden a little now that he's playing that deeper role, in midfield, that kind of the anchor, or not the anchor, but the pivot that a lot of teams are going to, that kind of slightly skillful defensive midfielder, but just meaning that between his age and now having to play in multiple tournaments this year, or not multiple, because obviously everybody plays in multiple, but having to play in Europe this year with that added extra burden, of high price, fast paced, high priced fixtures. You know, it's like I said, it just all adds up to Liverpool kind of falling off a little this year, and that. I mean, I know last week you said you can't really make really good predictions until the 10th game, but like I said, right now I just would expect Liverpool, come that 10th game or, you know, Christmas time, that, you know, they would already, you know, 5th, 6th maybe. So I don't know. I kind of rambled, but like I said, for me, just replacing Balotelli, or I'm sorry, replacing Suarez with Balotelli, it's not the great move that everybody makes it out to be, because, like I said, Balotelli is just more of a hype player, and for all his, for all his potential and natural talent, he still has to come into that, and, you know, Suarez was a world-class striker, and Balotelli right now is more of a name than anything else. So,
well, I will let you ramble on, because it will allow me to go ramble on.
Now, yeah, zap!
Don't sing your song. Gotta work my way around the world. Oh boy! So there's Liverpool and West Ham.
Yeah, which, man, looks like Allardyce might actually be able to put a team together, plays a little bit more than long ball. It's just weird. The EPL's gone bonkers, or even more bonkers than normal.
Okay, so does that mean that we should be ready on the lookout for journalists to be writing articles of Allardyce for England?
Yeah, because if not, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Now, granted, I'm joking, but when Wenger leaves, Sam Allardyce for Arsenal. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Allardyce for Arsenal.
Yeah. That'll be the day.
Oh, boy.
Whoosh.
Oh, boy, you silly man. All right, well.
Yeah. Allardyce for England, why not? Because it's either that or old Ari, and Ari's crap on the bed these days.
This is true. So now let's get into some. I keep thinking that these days are over, and, you know, especially after last week's, you know, triumph over QPR. But no, it is back. Manchester United, Schadenfreude.
Man, just when I think it can't get any better, it just gets even more delicious. 5-3 to Leicester after being 3-1 up after an hour, and they somehow contrived to blow it. It's so fantastic.
Yes, and that is with Rooney, Van Persie, Falcao, Di Maria, and Herrera all starting.
Well, yeah, because speaking of Falcao, I just don't understand how you can have all that talent and somehow Van Hall and Man U contrives to Falcao it up. Oh, man, that might have been the worst joke ever.
So,
boom.
Let's talk about, now, what do you think Van Hall's doing here? Is it truly a case of him being new to the Premier League? He doesn't understand that even against a newly promoted side such as Leicester, that you do need to have some type of balance in your lineup?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I mean, I know you asked me the question, I'm supposed to provide an answer, but I don't know if I can provide one other than I'm not sure, because it just seems like with the talent at their disposal that, yeah, they should be able to dispatch a side like Leicester, I don't want to say easily, but, fairly regularly, I guess, or just not completely collapse at the end like they did, which that's the thing that's most shocking to me, is that, you know, it's one thing for Man U sides in the past that had all that talent and won all those titles, and, you know, they would blow a lead or give or throw away a result here and there every now and then. But when they do it now, they just do it, and when they do it, they look so weak. It's just such an odd thing to see. And like I said, I'm just not sure if it's a system thing, if it's, you know, Van Gaal just hasn't gotten the message through to the players yet, if the players just don't fully trust the system, when things go tough or what. But like I said, it's just so odd to see players, you know, at a club like Man U, and, you know, we're talking big name players that just basically ship it in when things start going well. Because, I mean, other than Rooney today, it just seemed like when things were going poorly, like I said, a lot of guys just looked like they shipped it in, which is, like I said, for a club like Man U is pretty shocking.
Yes, and Rooney was outspoken in his post-game just a little comments, and the Sky Sports has a headline: Manchester United captain Wayne Rooney slams shambolic defending in Leicester City defeat. Now, this is funny to me because WhoScored.com is crediting Rooney with an error that led to a goal.
Yeah, and he was during the match, he was giving it to the guys pretty good, so it's, I don't know. Obviously, a lot of guys are gonna say, "Oh, well, that's good. That's a good captain there. He's giving it to the players when they, you know, when they deserve it, and this and that." But it looked like he was berating guys, and there's a difference between, you know, getting on somebody's back in a leadership role, and, you know, even when you're angry and taking it out of somebody, that you can still be kind of motivating. I mean, obviously, we'll never know because we weren't on the pitch. But the way his neck veins were popping out when he was yelling, it didn't seem like it was constructive criticism. Let's put it that way.
I gotcha. So, in this match, I guess you could argue that two of the deciding goals were both penalties. And so I'll ask the question, if you ask a Manchester United fan, they say that both of them were not penalties.
Yeah, which karma alone means they need to, you know, shut it.
Which is pretty funny, yes. But is Manchester United favoritism dead? Is referees being intimidated by Fergie over now that we're, you know, a year plus away from his ring?
I think it is, and you know, obviously this is the kind of thing it's impossible to prove, because, you know, even if you ask people, they're never going to say that, oh yeah, well, I was intimidated by Ferguson, you know, especially while they're still officiating. But I personally think that has a lot to do with it, that I don't want to say that, but yeah, let me frame it in the sense that even if it's not personally about Ferguson being intimidating, I think it's more to do with just that mystique of Ferguson and what he brought to the Man U club that's gone. And, you know, not exactly his intimidation, although personally I do think he did intentionally intimidate officials at times. But yeah, I think it has more to do with just the whole fact that he's gone, and that just more that, like I said, that more the mystique and how they there was just always that sense, even when you were up on Man U, that you know it was inevitable. You know, the 80th or 85th or later minute goal was going to come, or you know the stoppage time goal was coming. So I think a lot of that is gone, just as much as the Fergie thing is gone too, and that teams are more confident not only to take it to Man U throughout the game, but they're more confident at the end that, you know, that Man U doesn't have, I don't want to say the quality, because they obviously have a lot of really good players still there, and, you know, bringing in guys like Herrera and Maria and Falcao. But yeah, I just think that teams are much more confident in getting results and closing matches out now than they used to be. That's, and long may it continue.
Yes, and that's definitely the case, as you can see in the results that we've seen in the past season plus. So it is very interesting. So we'll see. It's just a matter of time with the resources they have and the type of manager that Van Gaal is. They will turn it around. The question is how soon. And as you said, hopefully not sooner than later.
Yeah, because like you said, they're definitely going to become, you know, a top club again, which is why I'm going to get my punches in now, baby. So
that's right. Kick them now.
Yeah, kick them now, because 3 years from now they'll be shitting on my club like the last 15 years.
Yes, there's no UFC referee to stop this fight.
Right.
All right. Well, let's get into the big news from today.
Yeah.
And that would have to be City, Manchester City hosting Chelsea at the Etihad.
The oil bowl.
Yes, I guess I forgot about that. The oil bowl. And the big news with that was, one, Frank Lampard, a.k.a. Super Frank, a.k.a. Fat Frank, scoring a goal when Manchester City was down to 10 men to equalize and giving City a point against Chelsea. And, yeah, as you said, I watched this match, and you caught on the same thing when Chelsea was a man up. The NBC commentators were asking, is Mourinho going to open things up? And I'm like, oh, are you kidding me?
Well, yeah, they were saying that at halftime because, yeah, he technically did open it up a little when they went a man up. But yeah, the pundits at halftime were, well, is he going to open it up? It's like, hell no, he's not going to open it up. He's on the road against what he definitely thinks is one of his direct rivals. Hell no, he's not going to open it up. He's going to keep it tight and try to win it 1-0 or be happy 0-0.
Yes,
like I said, it was only the sending off that kind of, you know, changed his mind tactically a little bit.
Yes, Zabaleta got sent off, and I think some people thought it was harsh, but I think fairly. I mean, he had a yellow. When you're on a yellow, you can't do what he did to pick up another yellow. But
harsh one for me was the first one.
Yeah, true. But did you see?
I guess not harsh, but questionable.
But there was the picture on Twitter that was trending pretty wide. The picture of Diego Costa basically putting Zabaleta in a chokehold. And Zabaleta actually tweeted after the match, I don't know how this guy didn't get sent off after seeing this picture.
Well, I can tell you. Mike Dean,
yes. He's a top official.
Yeah, him and Clattenburg are the two that I hate the most, even more than Webb. But
so there you go. So I think the Chelsea fans singing for Lampard as he comes on and then he scores minutes later to equalize is pretty funny.
Yeah, no, that incident alone made my day. I mean, granted, it helped that the Saints won later in the NFL, but yeah, the the Chelsea fans singing and then Lamb scoring the winner, that just capped off a really terrific weekend for me. It was like, oh, my God, this is – you just can't write this crap. I mean, you could, but, you know, the fact that it gets played out in the EPL like that is just – it's just – oh, it just – it warms the cockles of my heart, and I'm not even sure where that's at, so –
Yes, like the old Dennis Leary. He's like, it makes me feel good somewhere in the cockles. And then he's like, maybe somewhere in the subcockles.
Yeah, the subcockle region. Yes, my subcockle region was definitely full of amusement today, or whatever subcockle regions get filled with.
And, I mean, I'm no fan of City. I mean, I respect their club a little more than Chelsea. And because I respect their players a little bit more and the way they do things. But Manuel Pellegrini got on my list, on my good list today for his post-game comments, to where he called Chelsea a small team. Here's some of the quotes. Pellegrini said, "I think we played 90 minutes against a small team trying to defend. I would not be happy to play that way. 10 players defended their own half. They scored a counterattack, and then they continued to defend until the end." He said, "I think we played against exactly the same team we played against Stoke here." He compared Chelsea and Mourinho's tactics to Stoke.
Yeah, because what's funny about that is Stoke actually tries to play a little this year. So I think he, I'm not sure if he meant it exactly like that, but if he did, that's even more brilliant than the face of it for Pellegrini. But yeah, it's just like one of my fellow Arsenal timeline people tweeted, you know, if we have two shots, you know, it's a crisis, or it's a tactical meltdown. When Chelsea does it on the road because they were up 1-0, it's genius tactics by Mourinho.
And as we said, we're no fan of how Mourinho plays with the talent that he has on that team. I mean, good Lord, the talent on their bench is good enough to start your own team and to be able to score goals on a regular basis.
Hell, their third team that's out on loan could probably finish mid-table in the EPL.
That's probably true. And
or at least be in the EPL.
Yeah, and then there's the fact that now they do a little better against lesser teams, and they score a lot of goals, but it's not because they're attacking, it's just because they're highly efficient on the counterattack to finish those chances that you give them. And against a bigger side like we saw today, it's basically try to score a goal on the counter and then shut down shop, which is disgraceful as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, it's Mourinho would have definitely made a fantastic manager in the Catenaccio era in Italy from the 50s to the basically into the late 80s, early 90s. Because yeah, all that talent he has, and again, I mean, obviously Chelsea fans don't care if he's going to get results, and Mourinho fans don't care if he gets results, and that's what kind of weirds me out is there's actually a lot of people that seem to be more of a Mourinho fan than a club that he's at fan, which, you know, which is a whole nother debate in and of itself. So obviously those guys aren't going to care, but you know, when tickets and all, or, you know, when in the age when people complain about ticket prices and how much it costs to be a fan and travel here and there, and, you know, how much players make per week and all this and that, it just seems like there's a little bit of disservice done to the game or at a club of that stature when you basically just bore people to death. And that you, I likened him to one of our buddies on Twitter today, that Mourinho's kind of like Alain Prost, that he basically, he waits for other people to make mistakes and then he pounces. He doesn't necessarily, there's no actual like artistic brilliance to him. He basically just capitalizes on other people's mistakes, which obviously you can be very successful doing that. But that, you know, he's never gonna write a great song or an opera. He's gonna write you a textbook, and it's gonna be boring, and you're gonna hate it, you know.
But it's gonna sell millions of copies.
Oh yeah, and it's gonna be successful too. It's just, it's never gonna win any, you know, any artistic awards.
Gotcha. So there we go. So that was the weekend in the Prem, and as we talked about with all the upsets, and this is something that you stated to me, Corey, is that, you know, I think this league is just going to get harder and harder because of the influx of the TV money. You have now sides in the championship who are coming up who are playing, you know, proper football, attacking football. They're not sitting back playing lawn ball. So it's getting harder and harder to play against these lower sides because they have more talent and they're not afraid of these bigger clubs a lot of the time. And as you said, when back in the day when a club like Leicester would beat Manchester United, you know, it might be 1-0 or 2-1. But for Leicester to win 5-3, it's pretty much unheard of.
Yeah, because especially with and I'll add that a lot of the tactics that guys employ nowadays lead to that too. And this is the reason why people like Mourinho do like to play, despite, you know, the wealth of talent, do still like to play more of a counter-attacking style. But because of the emphasis in a lot of guys' tactics of pressing high up the field, it leaves a lot of space. You know, if you lose possession in the wrong areas, guys are out of position, and now it leaves, you know, your back line exposed. You know, if you lose the ball in the wrong area and, you know, guys are all over the place, and if they're not positionally sound, even if you have a lot of talent, teams can exploit that nowadays, which basically happened, you know, was one of Arsenal's Achilles heels the last several years. And there's your obligatory show Arsenal reference. But like I said, just meaning in the sense that because of the emphasis on a lot of pressing nowadays, because England's always loved to press, but pressing so high up the field now that it leaves a lot of teams open to the counterattack. So like I said, a lot of these clubs that come up now, you know, they're not like they used to be, to where they were basically a bunch of plonkers, for the lack of a better word, or, you know, in baseball terms, they were the career 3A guys or 4A guys that were kind of in between. You know, they were too good for the championship, but they weren't quite good enough for the Premier League. But now those guys come up, and because a lot of teams like to play now, that they can now compete with a lot of big clubs, much to closed entity systems chagrin. But yeah, I mean, you got championship sides now that are spending, you know, $10-12 million in transfers now too. So you got, you know, that spending is starting to trickle down into the second level too. So that, like I said, you get a lot of guys that are starting to come over that are pretty talented. You know, places like France, Holland, Belgium, that are now proliferating the second division too, not just the EPL. So as you were saying before I started rambling, that it's only going to get harder, maybe not so much for the big spenders, you know, like City and Chelsea, but a lot of those mid-table sides are going to find it much more difficult to stay up, you know, in the coming years, in my opinion.
And I don't know if you did this intentionally.
Maybe, maybe not.
But you just mentioned closed entities. Yes? Did you not?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Okay, all right, thank you. And so, with that in mind, we are going to flip the page on this Premier League weekend, which was outstanding.
Oh, it was one of the best ever. For me.
And we are going to talk about some domestic football. Or really not football, but we're going to talk about the domestic league, which is also a closed entity. And let's talk about this abomination that is the new MLS logo.
Yeah, which obviously, you know, people, you know, don't add us, bro. You know, we swore we were never going to talk about the MLS again. But this logo is so bad. How bad is it? I'll tell you how bad it is. It's so bad. Whew. Actually, I'm not going to tell you how bad it is because I can't think of how bad it is. It's so bad, it looks like whoever got paid the $500,000 or whatever the marketing price was, they basically shipped it in and they used not just a bad clip art program logo from like 1992. That's how bad this logo is.
It's pretty bad, and what it's even worse is the logo, you know, is just generic, a shield, a split shield with a little kickstand thing kicking out with some stars on it. But then they also made league-mandated versions of this logo for every franchise. I won't say club because they're not clubs. They're franchises.
Yeah.
And those are even worse. Terrible.
Yeah, which, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but to me, that basically says to me, this logo is so bad that we're going to force all the teams to show it just to give it some legitimacy.
There we go. So Twitter was pretty funny that day.
Yeah.
There was this hashtag, and we'll go through some of these here, Corey. Hashtag explain the MLS logo.
Yeah.
And this one comes from at Black with Black, who goes by the name of Jason, it says. He says, explain the MLS logo. The designer forgot the logo was due today until about an hour ago. That sounds about right.
Yeah, as somebody who survived high school English on writing book reports the same day they were due, I would agree with that.
Okay, next one from at Football Intellect, Maxi Rodriguez. He says, explain the MLS logo. The line extending beyond the perimeter symbolizes how MLS rarely has a leg to stand on when discussing rules, signings, and munitia. the minutia is very important.
Yeah, it's like you lapsed into like a German accent when you said minutia.
Yeah, I did, huh?
Yeah, it was kind of neat.
Makes me sound more educated and more MLS-like.
Yeah.
Here's my favorite one.
Engineer.
Hashtag explain the MLS logo. This is from the glancing header. It shows the distribution of income between the DPs and the rest of the players.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
That's the winner right there.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one.
Oh, my goodness. These logos are terrible.
Yeah, I think the one that I tweeted was that the three stars stand for Don Garber, Sunil Gulati, and Landon Donovan.
Oh, nice. And here's two more. Explain another hashtag explain the MLS logo. This is from at DJ Chewbacca. That's pretty cool. DJ Chewbacca says, it's half blank to show how many U.S. soccer fans don't care about MLS.
Yeah, I'm in the white. I'm in the white half.
Ding, 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 ding. And here's the last comment. This is from at Mike Flick. He messaged MLS in relation to the logo. He says, MLS provided more explanation for its stupid new logo. Well, hold on. MLS provided more explanation for its stupid new logo than it typically provides for player acquisition procedures.
Which, yeah, so true.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah, MLS.
It just looked like it looked like one of those really bad generic randomly generated logos when you're playing like an old version of football or FIFA Manager, when you're playing one of those like those fake regen clubs and they have to have a fake logo. It looked like one of those.
Yeah, it's terrible. And I know a lot of people in the past have complained about the MLS logo was before, saying that it looked outdated and it looked like clip art. And then they went and did this. It truly is.
Which it looks like they actually use clip art.
Yeah.
And like I said, clip art. It's not even like a modern clip art. It's like a clip art from like Windows Millennium or something.
Windows 95.
Yeah. It's just. I'm sorry if you like MLS, more power to you. It's just this logo is just yet another piece of evidence for me that the league's just a big joke.
That's right. And there's another thing. Also on Twitter today, I saw somebody was at an MLS match, and he had a, like, "You suck, Garber" scarf.
Oh, yeah. That was a really good tweet over the weekend, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty interesting. I might buy one of those.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if he got those from that what's that site that – there's some site that lets you print custom scarves without ordering a dozen or two.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, or maybe he's got a trendy or a handy girlfriend that can sew. Or, hey, it's, you know, 21st century. Maybe crochet. He crochets. Yeah. Maybe he himself crochets.
It is possible.
Yeah, see, if my grandma was still alive, I'd get her to crochet me one a Don Garber sucks scarf. My grandma was quite the crocheter, actually.
Yes.
That's neither here nor there.
All right, so the apple cart has been turned this week, and I'm just thinking that it's going to be a preview of a lot of things to come for the rest of the season. So,
man, I hope so, because, the weekend was fantastic.
So if you're the apple cart driver or pusher or whatever you are with the apple cart, wear a helmet from now on, because you're going to need it.
Yeah, and I think I may go take, like $20 flyers on West Ham and Southampton to win the league.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I say, well, at this point, why not? I mean, if there's going to be more weekends like that, why not?
Yep. So, all right, so remember we got a third round of the League Cup this midweek, and then more league action again on the weekend. So.
Oh, including, you know what?
Oh, yes, we have a North London derby.
Ah, fisticuffs. Two Daff Yanks arm wrestling contest or something.
Which I'm not looking forward to after our showing today.
don't worry. You'll at least score first, like we always do. Or like we always give up, I mean.
We'll see. Yeah, so next weekend will be the North London Derby version of the Two Daff Yanks podcast. So,
yeah,
come prepared, folks.
Yeah, somebody's going to be ornery next weekend.
Yep. So, all right. So, for Corey Chatelain, I'm Chad Smith. Thank you for listening to the show. Enjoy the football this week, and we will talk with you soon.
And as long as you keep serving it up, I'm going to keep eating it, man, you Schadenfreude. Nom, 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 nom.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at TwoDaftYanks.com or at TwoDaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.